Every year that Phil Murphy has been governor of New Jersey, he's declared the state to be financially strong. Every year that Phil Murphy has been governor of New Jersey, state spending has increased. In what will be his final year as governor, Phil Murphy has now called for budget cuts and spending cuts. My first guest today is here to explain what brought about this change in fiscal policy and whether spending cuts are the cure-all for what financially ails New Jersey. He's senior policy analyst with New Jersey Policy Perspective, Peter Chin. How are you today, Peter?
Doing well. Thanks for having me, Chris.
New Jersey Policy Perspective website, njpp.org. You'll find it conveniently located at our homepage for your use of learning more about this and the other points of focus of New Jersey public policy. So if you look at the financial tail of the tape for New Jersey, current state budget is just about $56.5 billion. You want to do a compare and contrast. Last Chris Christie budget was around $34.7 billion. So Governor Murphy, as I said, has added a lot to the state spending scheme of things. And if you look at the, well, they call it a structural deficit versus actual assets. The structural deficit is $2.1 billion, but they're sitting on a $6.1 billion surplus. But that's down from earlier this year of around $8 billion, and a lot of that could be credited to the federal funds that the state received regarding the COVID programs. So when you look at what the governor's calling for in budget cuts in the here and now, plus what he is promising slash threatening in what will be his final budget as governor, do the answers rest with spending cuts and salary cuts?
So let me just back up to a point that you made earlier, and I just want to provide a little bit of context for it. You know, we've seen the growth in the state budget, and people have sort of highlighted the difference between the last Christie budget and the most recent Murphy budget. And a lot of that difference, well, first of all, there was inflation that happened between then and now. And if we look at inflationary growth, you know, the gap is much smaller. But inflation affects government services too. They have to buy materials that are more expensive, and, you know, inflation affects all sectors, including state government. But then if you look at the rest of the growth, you're looking at a lot of school funding, big increases in school funding, which many communities are saying they need more of, not less. And the state is finally making its legally required pension payments, which the Christie administration neglected during much of its term, and that previous governors, Democrat and Republican alike, all neglected. So in a lot of ways, the sort of growth in the budget is simply meeting existing obligations that New Jersey had that had underinvested in for years, for decades. And one of the reasons why the pension payments have to be so big now is because we basically didn't make them for decades beforehand, which, you know, in the world of compounding interest, ends up adding up to a lot of money that we have to make up now. And I think that points to some of our concern, which is, if we start cutting back and trying to avoid important investments now, pull back from our obligations, we're going to be in the same spot we were in, which is all of those deferred investments coming due and us not having the ability to pay for them.
And certainly, too, if a state becomes financially unfriendly, granted in the here and now, tax revenue has been on the increase. The last number I think I saw was 4.3%. But if people leave, well, what you depend on to do what you need to do, not just want to do, but need to do with state government, your funds through no control over what you have go away and you have to start scrapping and saving and scrimping and cutting again.
Sure, but what you see in the budget is not that the budget is not that the revenues are coming in lower than projected, because the state, you know, continues to grow. One of the reasons why the state has the surplus it has and has been able to spend as it has is because of revenue growth, right? We've seen incomes grow. We've seen sales grow. We've seen corporate revenues grow. And, you know, the state has continued on that track. And so I think there's we haven't seen any evidence of, you know, there being a substantial impact on that front. I think the bigger issue is that a number of sort of expenditure issues have been held at bay for a number of years, partially because of federal funding, that are now coming due. You know, higher healthcare costs for public employees, you know, that kind of trickles up from local government up through state government in the way that the state funds, you know, municipal and schools.
And there's also, they've also instituted a Stay New Jersey program that's a more recent additional cost. And the recently enacted corporate transit fee. I mean, these are, if funding isn't fixed, these two programs alone are going to add to a deficit.
Well, to be back up, the corporate transit fee is a revenue-generating program. It generates nearly $1 billion in revenue from the world's largest corporations. What it goes to, though, is New Jersey Transit.
Exactly.
So, you know, if you don't pay to fix New Jersey Transit, you know, you can't. The state's economic engine does not function if New Jersey Transit has a 30% cut. And this is what I mean when I say that the sort of the series of disinvestments and like short-term thinking around the budget that New Jersey made over decades of trying to patch the minimal New Jersey Transit operating budget by raiding its own capital funds so they couldn't do things like improve service have led to the point we're at now where, you know, we need a substantial amount of funding just to, you know, keep the lights on and keep the trains running, let alone running on time. So I think that's the real risk of what we're hearing, which is the potential for cuts in state services and programs. I think people kind of have forgotten how much smaller New Jersey state government is than it was, you know, two decades ago. There are fewer employees in state government now than there were in the year 2000, even though the state is, you know, has nearly a million more people, and has a substantial programs that it has to run. So, you know, what people expect from government is that it works effectively. You know, we hear horror stories all the time. People who are, you know, they can't get through to the motor vehicle. They have questions about their anchor payment. They have questions about their tax bill and they can't get someone on the phone and, you know, they have questions about their family leave. And the state needs workforce. The state needs capacity in order to meet the obligations that it has, that people expect from a government that works well. And the prospect of, you know, going backwards, I think, is a really concerning one for the state. And so, you know, we have a solution, right, which is that the state should raise more revenue, particularly from wealthy individuals and corporations who've made an enormous amount of money from the pandemic or post-pandemic and have soaked up a lot of the economic gains. And, you know, at this point, somebody in the top 1% of incomes in New Jersey pays a lower tax rate than people in the middle class. And that just, you know, that's a problem that has a solution. And we have a number of proposals in the report, which can be on our website, Fair and Square. But I think it's concerning that the first response is often, well, let's think about ways to cut instead of, you know, let's think about what the state needs for a robust economy. And are we able to provide all of that?
And one of the ideas that New Jersey Public Policy Perspective has is a restructuring of the tax rates, creating more high-end tax rates to get the high-end earners off of the what are currently the, we call them the high-end tax rates right now, but if you try to live on them, on the lower side of financially, you realize that it's more challenging than a blessing and it needs to get through. And that would raise a significant amount of money. You also talk about in the report too, restoring taxes on inherited wealth transfers. Some people call that a double taxation. Isn't that a lot of money that's already been taxed in various means and ways?
Well, lots of money is taxed in multiple ways. It doesn't mean the number of times that money changes hands doesn't mean that it's separately, that it can't be subjected to tax. And I think the big reason why the inherited wealth transfer is so important is because that's what drives wealth inequality, right? Or one of the big factors that drives wealth inequality. Most folks are not going to get an inheritance. I mean, most folks are not going to get an inheritance. If they do, it's not going to be in the $1 million range, right? Which is where a lot of the, you know, inherited wealth taxes really pick up, right? This is, and when we think about the people who are going to get those inheritances, they are primarily already wealthy. Right, they are primarily already high income, and so it just deepens the inequality that already exists. And this is not income that this person who is receiving it has earned. Right, this is income. This is money that someone else made. They don't. they have no they're not earning it the same way that they would be if they were earning income or even if they were investing, right? And so I think there are serious concerns about how these untaxed transfers just keep when we think about wealth and we think about like the kind of multi-generational wealth that has concentrated a lot of the economic growth of the planet, a lot of it is passed on through these kinds of transfers. If there's a kind of adage for very high income, very high wealth people, which is, you know, to buy, borrow, and then die, right? Because then all of these things just keep getting transferred on to the next generation by avoiding taxation at every turn, right? And so, you know, in order to get at the real wealth, we're a wealthy state. There's a lot of wealth inside the state. There's a lot of wealth that's being extracted from the state. And yet, it's oftentimes middle and lower income people who are paying the brunt of a lot of those the costs for managing the state, while the very wealthy and corporations who are not even state residents, right, the Amazons and Apples, Wells Fargos of the world, they're just, you know, they're running away with our lunch money. And so that's those concentrations of wealth. Those are the areas where there's untapped potential to fund the kinds of services that people want. People want more preschool, right? People want well-funded schools. People want public transit that works. People want municipal services that work, right? And that's all. Those are taxes, right? They're not paid for out of the goodness of anyone's heart. And that's sort of where we have to think about finding the real wealth of the state that's, you know, being hidden and collected by the very wealthy, and try to make sure that it's actually going towards the kinds of public goods that make the state a great place to live and that help generate more wealth in the future.
And you can find these details in the report at njpp.org, the website for New Jersey Policy Perspective. Here's our senior policy analyst, Peter Chen. Peter, thanks for giving certainly ideas to think about, and your report does do it in detail, where the title might make someone say, oh, wait a minute, but then when they read the explanation and the methods and the path, I think you'll wind up winning more people than losing more people on that same initially objectionable idea. And that is really what the NJ Policy Perspective does. It presents facts for people to learn from. And you do that indeed with this report. Thanks for being here today.
Well, thanks so much, Chris. I appreciate it.